It's all about perspective, right? So this is how the phone conversation went. What? They did what? They're not going to get away with that. There's no way they're going to get away with that. This is a conversation I had about 10 years ago with my wife, Julie. She had called me saying the check oil light just went on in her car, and I realized that's not a reason to get offended. But she said, I just took the car to get the oil changed yesterday, and now the check oil light's gone on. And she goes, I went and I checked the dipstick. And guess what? There's no oil in the car. So the conclusion was, the people at the Jiffy ripped us off. They took the old oil out of our car, and they did not put new oil into that. They weren't going to get away with it. Now, if you've been to Cross Point before, you may know I have a bit of a reputation of not being the handiest of fellows at any time. You fall off a ladder putting up Christmas lights, right? You buy the wrong color mulch, and so you spray paint it. They're all true, sad but true. You nearly lock yourself in the trunk of your car trying to fix it. And most recently, a few weeks ago, I called the air conditioner place, repairman, to get my air conditioning repaired, only to find out I just needed to replace the batteries in my thermostat. And so you hear, well worth paying, right? Hundreds of dollars to say, here's some Duracells. You hear these stories, and you might get the impression that I'm inept, that I'm incompetent. But I know about changing oil, all right? I know how to change oil. All right, I don't know how to change oil, but I know how to drive my car to the place of the people that know how to change oil. But I know the gist, right? You take the old stuff out, you put the new stuff in, right? All I knew was that what happened was not right. What they did was wrong. And you have to understand, I pride myself in being calm and collected and level-headed. I'm non-confrontational by nature. Now, my wife, Julie, a little different. This is different for me because she wasn't in the first service when I talked about this. My wife, Julie, is a little different than me. You ever see those old Frankenstein movies? It's a good start to a story about my wife, right? You ever see those old Frankenstein movies where all the villagers get up in arms and what do? They grab their pitchforks and torches, right? And we're going to storm the castle. We're going to get the monster, right? Oftentimes I have conversations with Julie that go something like this. I say, now, honey, before you grab your torch and pitchfork and you storm the castle, we might want to see it from the other person's perspective, because this is what I do, right? I've told my wife that instead of having a luggage rack on the top of our car, we may get a custom fitted rack for her pitchfork and torch that makes it really easy for her to go and storm the castle if she need be. Oh, by the way, these aren't wise things to say to your wife, by the way. I have the pitchfork scars to prove it. So anyway, I digress. In this situation, we were both angry. You see, for me, these jerks at the oil change place were ripping my wife off. Now, it's funny, not for a second did I ever go, oh, maybe they're just incompetent. No, I thought this was some nefarious plot of the Jiffy Lube people to screw me over. That's what it had to be, right? So I did what any reasonable person would do who has no skills whatsoever. I took it back to the oil change place, and I walked in there, and I'm sure I was shaking because, again, I'm non-confrontational. And I said to the guy at the counter, I said, my wife brought her car in here yesterday to get her oil changed. And guess what? You drain the oil out of her car, but you did not put new oil in it. Now, picture people who really know what they're doing having a guy like me come in and say that to them. Picture what their face looked like. And it was not positive or affirming to me whatsoever. But I was angry. And the guy just looked at me and he's like, I kind of doubt that. So he's like, we'll bring the car in. We'll have our guys look it over, right? He's kind of just doing this. And I'm getting ticked off because he's acting like this is no big deal. And so I'm sure that this is a plot against me and my wife that they are trying to now cover up. So I, like, there's the window there. I'm, like, watching through the window going, you're not going to get away with this. I see what you guys are up to. You're scheming and plotting, trying to figure out how you're going to get away with the big scam here at the oil change place. You're not going to dupe me. I had no idea even what I was looking for, right? But I'm looking in there, and I'm just going, they're not going to get away with it. Well, the guy comes back, and he says to me, there's oil in your car. I'm like, what? I said, my wife checked the dipstick, and there was no oil on the dipstick. And right now, if you kind of see where this story is going, you can go ahead and insert your own dipstick jokes right now if you'd like to. He was like, no, the guy forgot to push some sort of lever or button. That's why the check oil light went on. And mind you, I never checked the dipstick myself again. Then the guy explains it to me like I'm a four-year-old. He goes to me, he says, sir, new oil, when it's fresh, it's clear. So when your wife pulled the dipstick, she saw a clear dipstick, not to be confused with the people there at the oil change place who were just looking at a 6'2" dipstick in that case. Now, I don't know the gist of the entire conversation I had with my wife when I called her to let her know about the showdown at the OK Jiffy Lube Corral. All I remember is at some point it went something like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, we're going to have to find a new place to get our oil change. Yeah. I'm never going to be able to show my face in there again. So the point is, we don't always make the best choices when we're angry. And let's face it, we all get angry. We live in a world where we get angry, we get offended, we often act surprised too that somehow somebody offended us and hurt us. Because we think these things, we feel like we have the right to be angry. We generally feel like, well, we're right. And that it's okay because my anger, you understand, is justified. My anger is righteous. But in the series called Spark, talking about one powerful idea, today we're going to be talking about the power of being unoffendable. Now, here's the question. What if we made a conscious choice to be unoffendable? Now, what does it mean to be unoffendable? Well, first of all, if you are a grammar Nazi, you are probably already offended by the fact that we are using a word that apparently is not really a word, unoffendable. But unoffendable essentially speaks to this idea that we all generally feel like we are entitled to our anger. We have the right to be angry, and we can justify it, right? It can be good to get angry. I should be angry, or we need to get angry. And today I'm going to challenge you when it comes to this idea. I'm going to challenge you to give up the feeling of being entitled to your anger. A good friend of mine, Brant Hansen, wrote this book called Unoffendable. Brant and I worked in radio for years together. He still works in radio by my measures. One of the most talented people in radio. If you ever get a chance to listen to him, seek him out. But he wrote this book called Unoffendable. And in it, he says, not only can we choose to be unoffendable, we should choose that. We should forfeit our right to hold on to anger. And when we do this, we'll be making a sacrifice that is pleasing to God. And let me tell you right now, you might get a little ticked off at what we're talking about today because this may challenge you to have to give up that feeling of entitlement when it comes to anger. Or it may challenge you that you may have to give up holding a grudge because somebody offended you. Quite frankly, where's the fun in that, right? It's fun to be offended at times. But in the words of the Eagles and PJ and the band this morning, you may just have to get over it. By the way, amazing, amazing band today, right? So if we can strive to be unoffendable, here's the good news. It will change our world. It will change our lives because many of us find ourselves trapped essentially in this prison of resentment, anger, bitterness. Now, let me tell you this. Anger is a normal emotion. I'm not saying you can't be angry or you won't be angry. You will get angry. It is a given. People will hurt you. People will offend you. You will get angry. And you're not a bad person if you get angry. The Bible talks about anger a lot. One of the most famous verses in the Bible is from Ephesians 4:26, which just says, "In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry." Now, many of you probably over the years have heard this advice. We apply it to married people all the time. Don't go to bed angry. This is the inspiration essentially behind that advice. And the neat thing is that this goes beyond just great advice for couples. It goes for us. See, God's not saying you're not going to get angry, right? It says in your anger. He's already saying in your anger, you're going to get angry, but do not sin. And he's also saying, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. So basically it says we do need to get over it, or we do need to let it go, right? God says we must get rid of it. And if we don't do this, well, then we can connect the dots that our anger will lead to sin, holding grudges, revenge, bitterness, these types of things. We're going to get angry, but we're instructed to get rid of it. We're instructed to let it go. To let it go. Turn away. Slam the door. I don't care what they're going to say. Let the storms rage on. Hold on, this is just coming to me off the top of my head. The cold never bothered me anyway. Let it go. Sorry. Go. Someone should write those down because those would make great lyrics for a song. If you didn't get it from Ephesians 4:26 or the lyrics from Let It Go from Frozen, five verses later in Ephesians 4:31, it says this: get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. All types of evil behavior. So anger is right there in the middle of bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander. Now, if I haven't convinced you yet as far as this idea that we need to get rid of this idea of being entitled to our anger, it's because we like to be bitter and angry at times. Let's face it. It's great to complain. It sounds funny, but it's true. I mean, we Americans, we love to be angry. Check this out. In a survey conducted by Esquire and NBC News, look at this. It says roughly half of Americans said they're angrier than they used to be. We're angrier now than we have ever been before. And nearly 7 out of 10 of us said we get angry at least once a day about something that we hear in the news. We are angry people. And the National Institute of Health says this: more than 16 million Americans have a condition called intermittent explosive disorder in which people get angry out of proportion with circumstance. This means that thing that we see on Facebook that makes us go ballistic, that shouldn't really bother us, we do this, right? When someone cuts us off in traffic, we go nuts, right? In and of itself, these things shouldn't bother us that much. But because of intermittent explosive disorder, we are blowing these things out of proportion. And many of you probably thought intermittent explosive disorder was what you get after drinking the water in Mexico, and it's not. It's something completely different. The good thing about this crowd is some of you are already making that joke when I said intermittent explosive disorder. First hour, we're not as savvy. So it seems like we've made anger into like our national pastime here in America. You turn on TV, and I love watching ESPN. ESPN has these shows like Hot Takes, and or you may see variations of this on CNBC or CNN or Fox News, where they get two people in a room with differing opinions, and all they do is they yell at each other. And it's like sport, and they just yell at each other, and they complain. And know what never happens on these shows? One other person goes, you know, come to think of it, what you're saying is very reasonable. I'm wrong, my bad, you are right, you've completely changed my mind. It never happens, right? Now, before we go and make fun of these people, we do this too. Facebook, anybody? How many of you lost friends because of the election, right? Friend had a differing viewpoint, they said something you didn't agree with and offended you, and I can no longer be friends with them. Because we all have this tendency to align ourselves with opinions that agree with us, and when they don't, we get offended and we feel like we have to set the record straight. We have to tell people this. You know, generally, people will never change their mind because you've argued with them or you've made them feel awful or terrible, right? There apparently is one exception for this that I just found out this week where we can argue with someone to the point where it changes them, and it happens, believe it or not, in evangelism. Take a look at this headline. It says here, 92% of all conversions occur after a heated Facebook argument. Who knew? It's a joke. The Babylon Bee is like a satirical online newspaper, and right, because we know this. Like, this does not happen. And if you don't do this online, you have these imaginary conversations and arguments in your head, right? Someone says something to you, they hurt you, they offended you, said something you didn't like, and you're like, oh, I got the perfect comeback for them. And then if they say this, I'm going to come back with this. Then boom, I'm going to destroy everything that they're thinking is right. I'm going to win. These things never change anybody's opinion. In America, we've truly lost the art, the ability to really agree to disagree. And more than likely, all we're really doing is we're creating wedges and we're destroying relationships. Because if we drill down, these feelings and behaviors go well beyond the TV talking heads or well beyond Facebook, but they pour into our closest relationships, right? With our friends, with our coworkers, with our parents, with our kids, with our spouses. And let's face it, oftentimes we are less interested in resolving a dispute, less interested in resolving our differences, and we're more interested in being right. We like to be right. When it comes to a dispute, when it comes to differing opinions, we generally feel like, I'm right. Those poor saps, those idiots, they are wrong. Because feeling of being right, it feels good. It makes us feel superior. And we're always positive we are right, right? Take a listen to just conversations. Maybe you don't participate, but conversations you may overhear. Someone's talking about their job. Yeah, my boss, he's a jerk. My coworkers, they're incompetent. Nobody here knows what they're doing, right? Someone talking about a relationship. She is so inconsiderate. He is so selfish. And the list goes on and on and on, right? It's our dopey neighbor, the awful waiter, the mean teacher, the pastor at Cross Point, the maniac driver. We all have the maniac driver, right? Everybody who drives by us is a maniac. Everybody who drives in slow in front of us is an idiot. That rotten coach, and don't even get me started on the referee. I think I felt about all of these within the last 24 hours, believe it or not. And we will say things like, can you believe they said that? Can you believe that they did that? We're amazed that sometimes people offend us and hurt us. Now, here's the good thing for us, right, in this room. Good thing we don't ever do any of this. Good thing we never offend or annoy anybody else. Good thing we're always right. Good thing we're so smart. Well, here's what the Book of Wisdom in the Bible, Proverbs, says. It says, fools think their own way is right, but the wise listen to others. So kind of like my story in the beginning with the oil change place, so the road rage thing played out in that clip from the sitcom Malcolm in the Middle, anger does not make us smart. All throughout the Bible, anger is associated with foolishness. You want to see stuff about fools in the Bible? A lot of times it's tied to someone being angry. I'm going to ask you a question here. Think about how many times you made a really, really good decision when you were angry. I'll give you a second. You can't think of anything, can you, right? But you can probably think of a zillion decisions that you've made when you're angry that you look back and regret right now, right? Buying that Justin Bieber album. You were probably ticked off at the time. That was a bad decision, right? But that time you thought, Waffle House seems like a good choice at 2 a.m. You were probably angry at the time. The Incredible Hulk. He's not making good decisions. You're not going to him asking medical advice, are you? No, he's angry. We don't make good decisions when we're angry. A study published in the Harvard Business Review, which I'm just always devouring and reading, talked about how we not only make poor decisions when we're angry, but our anger impacts subsequent decisions. So whatever it is that we're angry about in the moment, we generally make the wrong decision when it comes to that particular instance. But there's a ripple effect of subsequent decisions that we make that are not even tied to what we were angry about that we will make poor decisions about, because anger skews the way we look. Anger is never associated with anything good. Again, if we come back to that verse in Ephesians 4:31 where it says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger right there in the middle, harsh words and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Anger isn't lumped in with anything good there, right? We sometimes think, well, I can hold on to my anger. My anger is okay in this circumstance. But we never say, well, slander is good in this circumstance. No, harsh words are never good. So why would we get this false notion that anger, it's okay just to kind of carry around anger and not let it go? Any of you frustrated right now? Any of you kind of angry right now? Seriously, I get it if you are, because it's tough to let go of our anger. It really, really is. Anybody have like an argument brewing in your head to like counter what we're talking about this morning? If you grew up in church, you may have heard about this thing called righteous anger. Righteous anger, if you don't know, is this something is so awful, so egregious, so wrong that thank God I am here to call somebody out on it because they're wrong. And not only am I right, I'm righteous. That's what righteous anger is. It's like me calling out somebody else's sin, like, well, someone has to do it, right? Thank God I'm here to do it. Kind of goes along with that saying that maybe you've heard people say, like, hate the sin, love the sinner. I heard someone once said, which I love, that said, here's an idea. How about you hate your sin? Don't worry about hating my sin. I'll worry about hating my sin. You worry about hating your sin. We'll save a lot of time and energy that way, not having to worry about hating other people's sin. But this is righteous anger, right? And righteous anger is not just a church thing, okay? We have variations of this. I'm not sure what we would call it outside of the church, but it's this idea that someone said something wrong or offensive or they're hating, right? They're hating, and so we need to call them out on it. Thank God we are so smart and so superior that we are here to call somebody out that. So that's like the secular, if you would, version of righteous anger. But here's the thing. So we're in church, so we'll talk about the Bible. That's crazy, right? The Bible never talks about righteous anger. Seriously, search through the Bible. You will not find the verse in there where it talks about righteous anger. As a matter of fact, in James 1, 19-20, it does say this, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must be all quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. Human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. So right there it tells us, human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. And if we go back to that original verse in Ephesians 4:26, where it talks about in your anger, do not sin, there's no like conditional clause to that. There's no in your anger, do not sin unless dot, 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 or in your anger, do not sin except when, or but, or if, right? Now you may be saying, here's another argument, I'd be saying, well, didn't Jesus get angry? I remember that story in the Bible. I heard something about Jesus getting so ticked off. He was in the temple and he's flipping over tables. Wasn't Jesus angry? Interesting thing about this is that that story is recounted in all four Gospels, the authorized biographies of Jesus, if you will, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's one of these unique stories where it's mentioned in all four of those books. And not one of those books do they ever describe Jesus as being angry or ticked off. But let's just even assume he was, right? Let's just assume Jesus was angry and mad, okay? So Jesus got mad. And throughout the Bible, I see stories in there where God gets mad, right? There's the wrath of God. Well, here's the challenging thing for all of us, myself included. So Jesus maybe got mad. Let's just say he did. Jesus got mad. God get angry, right? There's the wrath of God. We're not God. We're not Jesus. We're humans. They're perfect. We're not. We make mistake. We mess up. We're sinful. We have poor judgment. We can't really be trusted with our anger. We can't. In our anger, we do sin. And if we go again back to those verses about when we're angry, we generally don't make good choices. In our anger, we have the opportunity to be foolish. All right. So now some of you are like waiting, going, I have the ultimate trump card for this argument when it comes to your anger. What about all the awful, awful stuff that happens in our world? What about abuse and violence against children? What about starving people? What about sex trafficking? What about cancer? These things make me angry. They make me angry too. You're normal if these things make you angry. if you didn't get a little angry about these things, then maybe we'd worry about you. So you might be saying, well, isn't this the righteous anger clause then? Isn't this the good anger? See, if anger is like this opening fuel that you need to get you to move and do something to combat justice, that's great. That's fine. But here's the thing. We don't have to live in this perpetual state of anger and rage to know that abusing children is wrong. I can sit here and say, abusing children is wrong. And I don't have to get worked up into a lather, and I don't have to lose my mind about it, and it doesn't mean I care any less about it. Getting angry is not just some sort of marker that shows that we care more than somebody else does. Right? So I can sit here and say, yes, these things are wrong, without having to get angry about it. So what's the difference then? What difference does it make, right? We all can agree that these things are wrong, and whether I get angry or not get angry. Well, again, it comes back to decision-making when we're angry. Because if we put this in perspective of people in our world that are charged with doling out justice or keeping the peace or keeping the rules, right? So we think about people like judges, or we think about people like police officers. Don't we want them to not be acting out of anger? I'm sure it's got to be incredibly tough to be in those roles, because you probably see and hear things that probably grieve you and make you angry. But when it comes to the judgment and the decisions that these people have to make, whether in the moment or they're weighing a case, we don't want them angry, do we? We want them to be clear-headed, level-headed, fair, just. Unless, of course, you're in a courtroom and the judge's, you know, getting angry and mad at the other person in there, then by all means, rage on, get crazy, go nuts, right? Rip them apart. Now, shouldn't we fight justice? We should fight injustice, rather. We should fight injustice. But here's the thing. We can go about it without necessarily being in this, again, perpetual state of anger. We can be smart. We can be relentless. We can be compassionate when it comes to fighting true injustice. Action is good. Action is really good. Anger, not so good. And we oftentimes confuse these things. I found this fascinating. A University of British Columbia study found this. It found that the people who on social media who are the most vocal, the most critical, the most angry, the most up in arms about a particular cause, they're clicking like to something or whatever it is, they're posting links, they're the most vocal as far as being outraged and offended about something. Guess what? In the study, they found those people are the least likely to do anything about what they're actually angry about. There's no solution-focused posture that they're taking when it comes to this. Social media activism, people are less likely to do anything about that. And why? Because we feel in the moment, well, I've taken a stand. I've set the record straight. I've told people how it is. Good thing I'm here. But there was nothing productive about that. There was nothing sacrificial about that. But it makes us feel good like we've done something. And again, it comes back to this idea in our anger will fool us. There are those two words again, anger and fool, again in the same sentence. Your anger will fool you into thinking that you've actually done something when you haven't. So we need to let our anger go, because we don't make good decisions when we're angry. Our anger can fool us, and there's all sorts of studies about how anger can impact even our health. So this can be challenging, and I get that, and I understand that. So where does this all land? Because I realize it might not just be as simple as just saying, well, let go of your anger. Don't be angry, or don't let go of your anger. You're going to get angry, but let go of it. Don't sin. Let it go before the sun goes up. All true. But see, the power, when it comes to being unoffendable, lies in our ability to essentially do one thing. Being unoffendable lies in our ability to essentially do one thing. This is a toughie, and that's to forgive. And this is tough. We'll never really be able to let our anger go or be unoffendable unless we can forgive. And forgiveness is a concept we often do not understand or get right, because we wrongly think that to forgive somebody is to let them off the hook. To forgive does not mean that someone did not hurt you, not denying what happened, or that what they did was okay. It's not that. It doesn't mean that a person didn't legitimately offend you. It's not being a pushover. It's not being walked over. It doesn't mean you have to go on like nothing ever happened. You may have to put up boundaries in your life with people that you forgive because you can't be around them anymore, right? It doesn't mean you have to be around somebody anymore. You may have to change the tone and the nature of a relationship. And forgiveness is not contingent, here's a biggie, on someone ever saying they're sorry or admitting they're wrong. And that's hard. Because it's a lot easier to go, well, I'd forgive them if they ever said they're sorry. I'd forgive them if they ever admitted that they're wrong. But they can't even do that, so why should I forgive them? Here's the thing, you may never get an apology. If forgiveness is dependent on the response you get from somebody else, you will probably be sorely disappointed because you may never get that response that you want. You may never get any kind of response, or the response you get does not seem satisfactory to you if it's contingent on how other people respond. Because we've all been there. We've all had those circumstances where we go, you hear how they said they're sorry? They didn't sound like they're sorry. That was a pretty weak apology. Lewis Smedy said this. He says, to forgive is to set a prisoner free and to discover that prisoner was you. Forgiveness is not letting somebody else off the hook. It's letting yourself off the hook. It's letting go of bitterness, resentment, hurt, and anger. These create a prison of ugliness that we get trapped in. And we've all been there before. A person has really, really hurt us, made you mad. They act like nothing ever happened. How can they act like nothing ever happened? And meanwhile, I am dealing with the consequences, the collateral damages, the pain associated with how this person hurt me. There's a saying, it's not in the Bible. Maybe you thought it was. To err is human, and to forgive is divine. The Pope said that. Well, not the Pope, but Alexander Pope. He was a poet. He wrote that in 1711. And what he said is true. As humans, we're going to mess up and we're going to screw up. We're going to make errors. That's what it is to be a human. Forgiveness, now that is divine. Basically, what he's saying is that is supernatural. It's a God thing. It does not come naturally to us as human beings. It's not easy to tell somebody, I forgive you, when they've hurt you. Or maybe they've repeatedly hurt you. It's not easy to say, I forgive you, but it's divine. It's freeing. Forgiveness unlocks that door, that prison. On the screen here, this is a picture of Renee Napier. She's a mom of two twin girls. On May 11th, 2002, one of her daughters, Lisa, was in the car, or one of her daughters, Megan, was in a car with her best friend, Lisa. They live in Florida. They are on their way home from the beach when their car was hit by a drunk driver. In an instant, both girls were dead. Renee was a devastated mom having to say goodbye to her 20-year-old daughter. And why? Because someone made an incredibly selfish, reckless decision to drink and drive. Talk about not fair. Talk about unjust. Talk about something to be angry about. Like what happens in a lot of these circumstances, the two innocent people lost their lives. The guy behind the wheel, he lived. Yeah, he was sentenced to 22 years in prison, but he lived. And I can imagine as a parent going, that's nice for you. Yeah, you're in prison, but you're still alive. You have people that can come visit you. You don't have parents that are grieving the loss of a child. And so Renee was angry, and she was frustrated, and she was bitter, but she wanted to do something productive. And so she made it her mission to go around speaking to churches and organizations and schools about how to prevent drunk driving. She wanted to make something good come out of her tragedy. And in and of itself, that was wonderful and great. But a crazy thing happened. Several years into this mission, it became clear to Renee that something was missing. That she'd been avoiding something. God was calling her to do something radical. She realized that she had not forgiven Eric Smallridge, the man who killed her daughter. And so she did something crazy. We would think is crazy. I think extremely difficult. She visited Eric in prison and said, "I forgive you." How do you do that? Even Eric said, "I can't forgive myself. How can somebody else, much less the mother of one of the people I killed, forgive me?" Renee said that when she did that, that's when everything changed for her. The weight of the resentment, the bitterness, the anger, the hatred, that weight that just hung around her neck was gone. She became free. And if the story ended there, it would be amazing. I just go on with the rest of my life. I forgave. I made peace with it, right? It doesn't end there. She would continue to go visit Eric in prison on a regular basis. Other members of Renee's family started visiting Eric in prison as well. And they also forgave him. As crazy as it sounds, they began to refer to Eric as a member of their family. And because of this amazing act of love and grace and forgiveness and kindness, Eric gave his life to Christ in prison. His life changed. And if the story ended there, it would be amazing. Renee and her family went to the courts and advocated for Eric's sentence to be reduced. Renee and 11 members of her family each took turns in front of a judge on his behalf. Not his family, the victim's family, saying his sentence should be reduced. She says everybody deserves a second chance. Judge says in all his time as a judge, he'd never heard anything like that before. And he nearly cut Eric's sentence in half, from 22 years down to 12. That's her hugging Eric. She did the seemingly impossible. She forgave the man who killed her daughter. She did it so that Eric would have a second chance in life, she said. And here's crazy on top of crazy on top of amazing. Renee and Eric have now made it their joint mission to go around talking about how to prevent drunk driving. But more importantly, their joint mission is they go and they speak together as they talk about the power of forgiveness. See, their story is really the story of two prisoners being set free, him from an actual prison and Renee from the prison of hatred and anger and bitterness. And really for Eric, being set free from the prison of regret and hurt and pain as well. Matthew West, if you ever hear Matthew West on Christian radio, a song called Forgiveness, that story is the story behind that song. It's an amazing story. That's why earlier today when we sang Amazing Grace, grace truly is amazing. And we struggle with this idea of extending grace and forgiveness to other people because for many of us, we're not able to fully receive it ourselves. Because in our hearts, we don't feel like we're worthy of it. I love what Brian Hansen wrote in his book. He says, "No wonder we get so angry. We're so displeased with others because we're convinced God is displeased with us. We believe God loves us, but suspect it's provisional based on whether or not we ever get our act straightened out." That's a lot to carry. That's that weight that we talked about. See, I don't know where you've been or what you've done, but God is not angry with you. Regardless of what you've ever done, his grace and forgiveness is unconditional. He says, come as you are. He'll straighten you out. He'll do the work. You don't have to get straightened out to come to him. And as you receive this amazing grace and forgiveness, may you give up this notion that you're entitled to your anger. May you choose forgiveness and choose to be unoffendable, because this kind of change really is possible. I realize what we talked about was really heavy today for many of us, and it lands in different places for each and every one of us, too. On the back of your connection card, there's some next steps on there. And so maybe for you, a big next step for wherever you happen to be, like maybe coming to church is just a big deal in and of itself. And so Maybe it would just be a big deal and a really cool deal for you to come back next week as we kick off the new series. Maybe for you, that's your next step. There's a few other next steps on there, too, that really just tie back to this one big idea. And you can take a look at these. Maybe it's just truly a matter of checking all of those because they really all tie together. But maybe for you, today has just been a challenge to consider this idea of giving up your anger or just being this perpetual state of anger or frustration and challenge that way. Maybe it's landed a different way. Maybe for you, you realize there's people in my life I have to forgive. Or maybe for you, it's I have to forgive myself and I have to accept God's grace. Maybe you've never done this before in your entire life. Maybe this is all brand new to you. Saying, yeah, I've messed up, I've screwed up, I want something better in my life. Well, God has something better for you. Salvation through him. And if you want that in your life, it's as simple as asking for it. And then if you've got questions about that, we'd be able to have you walk through that. So we're going to get out of here. We got one more song to play. But stand with me right now. I'd love to pray with you before we go. God, we just thank you for this opportunity to really hear from you today and to be challenged by this idea of giving up our right to be angry and the need to be able to do that. Not that we won't get angry. We will. We get that. But God, for some of us, there's hatred and there's anger and there's resentment and bitterness that are just these weights that are holding us down. So God, I pray that today we would be able to bring this to you. You tell us that we can cast all our cares upon you, all of the anger and bitterness and resentment and challenges that we have. And why can we do this? Because it says you care about us. So for those of us who just need to weigh down, take the weight off of our shoulders and give those to you, God, I pray that we're able to do that. For those of us who maybe have to make that challenging step, and it's a process, God, it may not happen before the sun goes down, but forgiving somebody else, God, I pray that you would give them the strength to be able to do that, not necessarily so much for that person, but for themselves. And for those of us, God, that need your grace and forgiveness, may we fully embrace and rest in the knowledge, God, that you have forgiven us, that you love us and your grace is there for us, and we can just live in that, God. And for those who want to make that choice to follow you, God, I just pray they say in their hearts, God, I want more of you in my life. I want you to be my Savior. It's as simple as saying that. God, wherever we happen today to land, I pray that you just meet us exactly where we're at. We just ask these things in your name, we pray.